It's the Steve Fast Show on WJBC. Megan Abbott is an expert of finding a dark side in the seemingly innocent. In her previous novels, Dare Me and The Fever, she has nearly defined a new genre, high school noir. In her latest book, You Will Know Me, she focuses on another seemingly innocuous subject, a gifted teen gymnast and her world of hopeful parents and coaches. Needless to say, in the book, something goes wrong. And we welcome Megan Abbott to the program. Megan, thanks for being back with us again.
Oh, so happy to be.
So what was the germ of this book, this idea to write about a young gymnast and her family?
It was really, I always wanted to write about a prodigy, but it was really 4 years ago exactly, the London Olympics. I remember watching the gymnast, Ali Raisman's parents. There was a sort of viral footage of them that they were watching her do her bar routine, and they were so engaged and so invested in it. And people kind of made fun of them or called them, stage parents. But I thought it was so fascinating, sort of what it takes in a family to create a prodigy, to create an Olympian.
What sort of research did you do to get into the world of youth gymnastics? I'm assuming that you didn't have a lot of familiarity with this subject before you were inspired.
No, I was not a gymnast nor any, I had no athletic capacity at all, but I was fascinated by it. And I read a lot of memoirs and talked to some gymnasts and some gymnast parents, but the most useful piece of research came from online forums, particularly among gymnasts and gymnast parents, where they kind of would speak, presumably in some ways privately, but it's on the internet, about their sort of worries and concerns and anxieties and sort of what it was like from the inside. So that kind of, almost kind of like a peephole into what it was like to be a part of that world, turned out to be the most useful bit of research.
Well, people might not think of the world of young girls' gymnastics as a ripe subject for crime noir, but when you think about it, it has everything in the way of motives for a crime. You have rivalries, you have money troubles, because any sport is so expensive for the parents. There are a lot of things at stake here.
Exactly. I mean, it's dangerous inherently, so you have that too, and you're dealing with major drives like ambition and as you say, the insecurities of, how much families have put on the line, the sacrifice involved. In addition, with gymnastics, the sort of complications of what it does to a girl's body, her normal development, her access to the rest of the world, it's kind of a hothouse of trouble.
Well, you talk about what it does to the girls' bodies. What did you learn about what girls have to go through to compete at this high level?
They start so young, as early as 3 or 4 years old, so inevitably it's going to shape your body and affect your development. So for a lot of serious elite-level gymnasts, it does forestall puberty. I mean, their bodies are these sort of muscle-bound machines that doesn't allow for the development of breasts, of sort of, it sort of forestalls a lot of that. So in some ways, these are very sophisticated girls who've traveled the world, and a lot rides on them. But in other ways, they're not really experiencing puberty as the rest of us might.
And you write about this in the book. When you talk about the body of this prodigy gymnast, Devin Knox, they are, and we see it in the Olympics, different. They look simultaneously younger and older, not quite a child, but, made up to look like a child because they have these incredibly powerful bodies, but it does set them apart.
It does, and there's something kind of confusing about it, I think, for a lot of us because, they're often, in some ways it affects growth and they're very tiny, and also tiny girls are, more effective gymnasts in many ways, but they have these sort of tree trunk-like bodies in part, but they're, supposed to smile like a little girl, but often they're doing these kind of moves that are a little seductive. And I think it's this sort of puzzle for all of us watching it. What are we really seeing? Not a girl, not yet a woman, but also a superwoman, And I think it creates this kind of crisis point for us as viewers often, if we think about it too much or if we don't think about it at all.
We're talking with Megan Abbott. Her new novel is called You Will Know Me. Megan, in your previous books, you've dealt with the world of young girls, high school girls, and you're particularly good at turning that age of anxiety and uncertainty and mixed messages into, horrible things sometimes. But you've shifted gears a bit in this book, and you write more from the parents' perspective. And I wonder why you decided to do that.
Yeah, I became really interested in that sort of moment that occurs, that I think occurs for all parents, when the child, whom they know so well, whom they created, becomes their own person. And I think particularly with a prodigy, especially with an athletic prodigy, the parents are so involved in the child's body and, you know, and sort of can read. I remember reading about so many sports parents who thought they could read every gesture on their child's face. They, you know, they were so in tune to their child's body that they, you know, any kind of twitch of the eye, they would know what it would mean. And at a certain point, that changes, usually in adolescence. And I think for a lot of parents, it's sort of this scary moment when they realize there's something on their child's face that they don't recognize at all. So I wanted to explore that from the parent's point of view. What is that like when you think you know your child, but inevitably there comes a point at which you can't?
Well, no child or elite athlete makes it to that level without a lot of investment from adults, parents, coaches, family. But even if the kids aren't at an elite level, like the gymnasts that you write about in your book, parents spend all this time and money for athletics. These teams kind of become their own ecosystem for parents and kids. It's kind of a closed world.
It is, and very insular. And that was one of the things I wanted to explore in the book, because it often starts to develop its own rules and logic. And there's just so much comparison among the other parents that it almost becomes this kind of, almost recreates the high school environment among the parents, you know, this sort of intense competitive rivalry situation. And I think it's really isolating too. I think that they are sort of, you lose access with the rest of the world. You know, not that high school, regular high school is so great, but I think it's really hard. And I think it's easy to sort of experience a kind of moral drift in that situation. Not that it can't be great for kids and parents too. In some cases, I think it's really a rescue function from other problems. But I think there is a danger too.
Well, you talked about the television images of the gymnast family that inspired you to write this book. And when you think about all of that investment parents put into their child for sports, you always hear these criticisms to say, well, these parents are living through their kid, or they're trying to relive something they did or couldn't do when they were that age. But part of it is so much of this investment makes parents give up their own identity for kids.
Yes, yes. No, I think that's quite true. It's important for me not to do a kind of stereotypical stage parent, because I'm not sure if that person really exists. And certainly, I think it's more complicated. And I think, you know, in the case of the Knoxes, there's a childhood accident that really propels them to do this. So it comes from such a good place, they're trying to restore something. And I think for a lot of these parents, it begins in wanting to do something for their child, but then it becomes consuming and their life begins to revolve around in ways that they didn't anticipate. And, you know, I think parents now are under a lot of pressure to spend so much on their children, to devote so much. You know, we're really far away from the Mad Men era of parenting, and maybe we've swung too far to the other extreme where everything is supposed to be for the child.
Of course, when there is a prodigy child that has so much investment, if there are other kids, the siblings don't always get that same kind of attention, just time spent, you know, going to the gymnastics meets, driving everywhere, even the cash that goes into developing one of these child athletes. There is, in your book, a sibling. Kids always argue and say, mom or dad likes you better. In the case of this, there's really good evidence to say, well, yeah.
Right. Yeah, I would be really interested in that. And that, you know, there's the little brother, Drew, and he is really, he's the odd one out, not only because he's not the prodigy, but he's a brainy, bookish kid. You know, he's not involved in sports at all. So really, the out, he would have been on the outs anyway. But in this case, even more so. And, you know, it was a little bit inspired by when I was a kid, my brother was a really incredible baseball player. And I was a year younger, and I remember spending every summer in the bleachers, you know, with the family, watching him play doubleheaders, you know, waiting for the Baskin-Robbins. That was my reward. And I just think it's so hard for those kids. I mean, in some ways, there's always an outsider in the family. But in these cases, I think it can become really extreme because, as you say, There's no mystery about who's the child that gets the most attention. It's obvious. And what do you do in that role? And is it possible for parents even to see it?
When you write any kind of crime noir, film noir, there are these plot engines that have worked time and time again. And in some of your previous books, you've been able to mine those in an environment of high school, or in this case, in this closed environment of, you know, youth gymnastics and the family that surrounds it. And one of the great engines is jealousy. Jealousy between high school friends or siblings, parents and teammates. When you're dealing with female characters, as you do here, is it especially tricky to write about jealousy? Because there are all these stereotypes where women are envious and jealous, and you know, men kind of get let off the hook sometimes.
Right. No, and you don't want it to become cartoonish or catfight, you know, that kind of thing, which is sort of what I'm fighting against. And one of the reasons I always want to explore it, because I do feel it's sort of treated as light and diminishing in the popular culture still, was this sort of, you know, Real Housewives kind of goofy thing, or, you know, or it's a sexualized thing. I mean, for me, I think that stems from a sort of latent fear of female aggression and the way that power operates between and among girls and women. And so that's sort of why I want to kind of mine it and try to go deeper and figure out why we're so uncomfortable about it. And I think, you know, one of the reasons is that female aggression does work a little differently than male aggression, because it has to be somewhat hidden, takes different forms, and when it explodes, it can be doubly terrifying for that reason. So it's definitely something you kind of don't want to shy away from and want to kind of plunge into.
Well, over the last couple of weeks, have you been watching the gymnastics coverage at the Rio Olympics?
Yes, it's sort of impossible not to, and people who've read the book keep tweeting or emailing me about reading the book at the same time as watching it, which I think is a disconcerting experience, I suppose.
Do you take it in any differently after having done all the research to write the book and have a different kind of view of what these girls are doing and what the experience is like?
Yeah, I feel like I'm on the other side of it now, where I understand the experiencing of seeing it not as just this sunny, happy experience for all the girls that I met, that I thought years before watching the Olympics, but I also don't see it as a wholly negative or sort of bad for these young women place either, right? You know, it's sort of kind of thrilling to see this sort of way that gymnasts are allowed to express their ambition and hunger more openly now, whereas before they had to kind of play ball a little more and be this sunny Mary Lou Retton type. And I think that's kind of great. It was very disappointing to see, I don't know if you saw, Gabby Douglas got a lot of mean treatment for, you know, for a variety of things, but being unhappy that she had lost. But somehow it's still there, this notion that she's supposed to hide her unhappiness despite the fact that she's worked her whole life towards this and put on the happy face. So that certainly I looked at differently since writing the book.
Yeah, what do you think about that reaction in the coverage and people's discussion about that? It gets a little bit into what you talk about of how, you know, how women can present themselves, you know, these kind of powerful athletes. Did she get more criticism and more heat because she should have put on, you know, a smiling, stereotypical face?
I do think so. There's something like that. We don't want to see the impact of the pressure that we put on this young woman, you know, as a society, as sort of part of the society that's made this the achievement of her life. So we want her to wear that mask, that smiling mask. I saw a little bit of, even in Simone Biles, there was the beam routine where she fell, so she didn't get that gold medal, and there was this wonderful moment where in the past she would have smiled and said, "I'm just happy to be here," you know, but instead she said, "Well, not many people lose their footing and still get the bronze." And I kind of love that, because she was unwilling to hide that. Yes, she was disappointed, but look at what I did. I thought that was kind of great.
Megan Abbott's new novel is called You Will Know Me, and she's been talking to us this morning. Megan, thanks so much for being with us today.
Oh, thank you so much. This was so much fun.
It's the Steve Fast Show on WJBC.